Hello, everyone, and welcome to Blind Bargains Cast number 28. I'm Joe Steinkamp here with my Patreon, my man who about town, the man who roots for the team that beats up my team, his Detroit Tigers, Mr. JJ Moto. How are you doing there, sir?
Yeah, and we lost. But that's okay, because football season is coming soon.
Yay, and, football!
You know, we're looking forward to football. That, and then that's all we can do at this point. Welcome to episode 28 for this week. We are sponsored again by Hims. Your needs are our solutions. By the way, the Smart Beetle and the Blazy Tee, they were out of stock for a bit. They're back in stock at many fine retailers, including us at AT Guys. So if you're looking for that piece of equipment, you can get that from Hims. And we also have an interview coming up a little bit later on this show from David Leposky. He was at the Pan Am Games in Toronto, and an interesting thing happened there regarding live audio description. We'll tell you more about that. And the sound off, last word. You got some crazy stories again. You're going to be here for last word this time, Joe?
I certainly hope so. Barring any, I actually did hear thunder a little earlier today and kind of was like, no, like going outside, trying to, wave the clouds away and all of that. You know, that's the only thing we missed in last week was like a big lightning strike, and then Patrick shows up, and that would have been interesting. But yeah, no,
I'm surprised he didn't put that in. I'm surprised he didn't edit that in. But, you know,
nice save. I'm surprised you didn't book your 4-month, $100,000 cruise, you know, and 60 ports of call. That's a lot of sea days on the boat. No, but
we wouldn't have Patrick for the next however many months that is.
Oh, yeah. But he would be reading things. He would be reading things with his iPhone, because he would be using KNFB Reader 2.0, releasing on August 20th, which is kind of perfect for the 2.0. And
I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, for the very, very, very beginning. And let's see if this quells the internet. You can try it before you buy it. Okay, there you go. That's the biggest complaint on social media. There it is. Done.
And a fair complaint. I mean, if you're paying $100 for a piece of software, you expect to be able to try it out, and it's good that it's there. How it seems to work is that you get a certain number of demo scans. I'm not sure what the final number ended up being. I think somewhere around 10 or 20 or something. But you get a certain number of demo scans, and then once you... If it exceeded that number, then you will have to make an in-app purchase. Now, of course, if you already have the KNFB Reader 1.0, when you download this one, it will copy your license over and you won't have to buy it again. But a whole bunch of new things in the new version. There's an interview from AppleViz, too.
Yep. Jim Gashel over at AppleViz with our friends over there, talking to them about all the new features that are available on 2.0. And you might have heard some of that from convention. A lot of those things that Jim was demonstrating will be in this release. Yeah. And I guess that means right around the corner, we might maybe possibly have the Android version in September. I mean, that was the thought.
Yeah, it seems like that should be coming soon as well. And a lot of the same features, I think, will be over there. Some support for the book reading stands, some of the different ones that are out there, like the scan stand. And some others are in there.
That one.
Some more Dropbox integration, so you can pretty much have all of your pictures and all your scans saved directly to Dropbox automatically. That's cool.
Ooh, nice savable things and shareable things as well.
Yeah, data charges apply.
That will be out before Android M Marshmallow. How do we feel about Marshmallow as M? I think you even predicted that. I think that was even one of the ones you suggested.
I'll have to go back and see if I said that. I have to go get Anna's opinion of that. Marshmallow.
I'd like the 0.1 release to be Stay Puff, and then I would like it to be... Other
you know, they have s'mores marshmallows. This was a new thing to me. It's probably been out for a long time. But they have marshmallows now that are shaped more. Because if you ever try to make a s'more.
Perfect for s'mores, okay.
S'mores. If you ever try to make a s'more, the marshmallow was always just a bad shape to try to stick on with the graham cracker and the chocolate. Now they're flatter and they've worked better with the graham cracker anyway.
I had s'mores Oreos earlier this year. They are yellow crackers / cookies with marshmallow cream on the inside, and surprisingly not as bad as that sounded. I did not make it sound appealing, but it was better than...
No, you did not.
I realized that. I'm just not sure I could make that very attractive at all. Oh, well. You know what is attractive is NVDA. A lot of people are choosing that. Can't wait to see what the results of the WebAIM survey is. Should be out really soon. And in the latest release candidate, updates is Windows 10 support. And I've been reading Al Pizzulli and some other people have been using it on the nightlies and saying that there's some great Microsoft Edge support in there, and Edge being the new Microsoft Windows 10 browser.
Are they the first? I'm a little, did the JAWS do Edge, or is NVIDIA the first to do any sort of Edge wrangling?
I you could argue that Narrator has some Edge support, and I do mean that kind of some.
It's bleeding Edge support for Edge.
Works a lot better with Edge than trying to use keyboard strokes with it. Would say that everybody's catching up when it comes to Edge, and that's not an AT fault. That is really Microsoft not really having all that. And that was kind of the stuff that Robert Sinclair talked about before a month ago about Edge and why they recommended that you could use Internet Explorer as your default browser. And so a lot of people I've read online have forgotten that that's there. There were people like, how do I install Internet Explorer on my Windows 10? It's already there. If you just hit your start menu and type in Internet Explorer, it will bring up IE11, and it's right there. Or you could use Cortana.
So it's a lot of confidence in the Microsoft's new browser that they still continue to ship the old browser.
I think it's the commitment to the enterprise. Not to, to push the enterprise off a cliff as they have in the past and give them no lifeline back. There were a couple in the web access community who said, Edge, great at getting me Firefox.
I used it to download Chrome.
Those were funny tweets.
I mean, it's like the on Android, Google continued to ship for the longest time the regular email client, which at some point really had no use because it was already Gmail on the phone, and Gmail at some point could do everything. But they kept supporting it for a long time. So sometimes you just have...
And now we have Inbox, which I'm not a huge fan of.
Right, and they still, of course, they have Inbox, which is their experimental thing. It's
there are some people who really like it.
It's supposed to be intelligent email. The Inbox thing is
artificially intelligent.
No real intelligence.
Oh, okay,
But yes, maybe it's artificial. How do you say this? AI poly. I guess is how you say this. Artificial intelligence for the blind. Here we go again. Some of you have maybe seen the YouTube video regarding this AI poly thing, which was developed by some. Students at the Singular University, which is a startup incubator in California every summer. So let's roll a little bit of that clip.
Return to P. Uploading it. White and gray. You are looking at a new Apple earbuds.
Hey, wow. That is all right.
So you think the sun is clear or is it behind the cloud?
Oh, it's definitely clear.
Take picture. Image.
Clouds under the sky.
Blue, white cloud under blue sky. So where is the cloud? Right here?
Yeah.
A couple of things. So I looked at an article from TechCrunch, among some other things. First of all, yes, the demo is edited, so it is not coming back with results in a half a second. Nifty, right? You know, so they're saying anywhere between 5 and 20. The thing that makes this one different than TapTapC and some of the other image identification things is the word poly. So theoretically, you can take a picture of something or a scene, and the app will identify multiple objects in the same scene. It kind of splits the object apart into regions or whatever, and then it will kind of try to find relationships. For instance, if it sees a picture of a man on a bike, they say it could come back man riding bike, and that would be done automatically. So again, it has potential. Ooh, it's another product where they're using the blind to reach broader markets. But hey, I don't mind being used in these situations.
I can, you know, casual use cases. I don't know how I feel about that in a work environment or something that might require complete accuracy. That's a really weird, I'll have to think about that. That is a really interesting thing.
And here's the bright, and this whole cloud thing is scary for anything sensitive.
Yeah.
That makes sense. They say that to use the iPhone, if you were to try to do it locally, you would need 25 to 30 minutes of computing power to do the same task locally as you can on the cloud. So part of it is, the claim is, the machines, the operating systems, the hardware that we use now still has not caught up to what the cloud can do when you just can employ a whole bunch of cores and a whole bunch of machines all at once to put things together. So that's part of the limitation. Not sure that's the entire limitation, but that's...
And people had mentioned Ray Kurzweil. Ray famously at a game developer conference several years ago talked about how he could envision... within his lifetime, the ability to hold up a device that would look at a table and chairs and say, with facial recognition, there's Joe, there's Patrick, there's JJ. and they're at a table with five chairs and 30 feet away from you. And he,
and Joe is smiling and looking at JJ and giving a grimace, you know,
when that, something even, like even that. More, but right. He really believed that that was possible. And at the time he said it, which is about almost 10 years ago, I just went, yeah, right. Whatever. That's like the Jetsons.
Oh, it's possible. This stuff's coming.
Yeah.
Part of it's you got to be careful. It's just like, you ever had the experience if you go somewhere and you thank somebody and use the wrong gender pronoun?
All right.
I've done that.
Right.
This app has had the same problem, apparently, in some of the tests.
Oh. So,
you know, if you want to say, you know, there is a long-haired man sitting across the table. No, that's not.
Long-haired person.
Right. Gender neutral. I mean.
Yes. Would you like to connect to your contact list so I can identify who they are and possibly violate their privacy? Yes. You know,
perhaps we don't have any more info on this person's gender. Would you like us to research them online?
Correct. Have them actually come up and put their fingerprint right here.
Shall we access their social security number and files using our federally standardized database?
Correct.
What?
Well, you know, there's downsides to accessibility. What could you say?
Yeah.
I could say that I could speak for 10,000 words. 10,000 words on Windows 10 is just one of the articles featured in the new Access World, as well as a conversation about workflow, which is a very popular iOS.
Is it exactly 10,000 words?
I have not counted. I've read a good bit of them. I would say at least 6,000 of those words, but I am working on a Windows 10 article with some how-tos and things like that. So I'm actually hitting my Apple Watch burnout point. So I may be done with Windows 10 real soon. I've talked about it for 8 months. So I think I've hit a wall. There are some other great things here in this month's Access World.
I know you've spoken 10,000 words on Windows 10.
I may have.
Per week.
Once or twice on a very long podcast. But I also had other people there, so there were some more words. They weren't all mine. Yeah. They weren't all mine. No. But definitely worth a read over there. Access World is one of those things, I would say, if you're trying to keep up with things, it is a must read. And
yeah, really good for the in-depth, longer form stuff. I mean, we do a really good job, I would like to think, and some other sites do, on the breaking news, and we try to cover them. But Access World kind of gets more in-depth and covers these longer form pieces that you're not going to find on our site and some other sites. So, you know, 16 years strong, and it's free, so you might as well check it out, and you can always just read the articles you like and see what you like.
You know, we are known for a lot of our classifieds. How many classifieds would you say that we've had over the years? Do you have a running count? Because we're celebrating our 350th piece of audio with this here podcast right now.
Wow, that's amazing. And I believe over 100 of them pretty much have been this year, right?
Yeah,
because a good number of those have been
convention. I mean, yeah, 28 of these shows.
They were way more sporadic starting in 2008, which was our first ones in Florida way back Correct. When. I don't even think those had an intro or anything. They were just raw interview.
But it's a great way to learn about things before you go out and shop and purchase things. And
3,000, you know, I'd say, though, for classifieds.
Really?
Huh. Yeah.
That's cool.
Really useful service. Where were you going with that?
I was saying that you could actually go out and research things for shopping. And into our next story, there seems to be a market for doing that with smart glasses. Here we were talking about being able to see things with artificial intelligence. And we've made jokes before about how these cameras would be persistent to be able to read things like barcodes or prices, or there's Amazon apps. If it's a product in a box, it can recognize the box and tell you what it is instantly. And some of that technology is coming out in ways for us to use that would make the shopping experience more accessible.
Yeah. So there's a research group over at Cornell, which has done research in the past, especially for anyone who lives in the New York area and has some sight. So, yes, they're discriminating against blind people, but it's about smart glasses and visually identifying objects. So this one ends up being for low vision users and trying to figure out how they might benefit someone who is grocery shopping specifically is the use case here. So a little bit of money that you can make. I'll get on them quickly because they're probably going to fill up, especially after we post
after
it on our
site.
After
this podcast especially.
Yeah, right. People want money and people like, you know, sometimes I like doing these research studies anyway. You know, sometimes it's cool to get paid. And I'll, of course, like doing the ones that are paid. But sometimes you learn about some really interesting future Agreed. Tech. It's just kind of fun to do that stuff.
How marketing works. And why did they say that? Or who are they aiming that product at? And you get a good idea through the focus groups or studies.
Right. It's really fun. I mean, I do a lot here in Kalamazoo. I've done a lot on quiet cars in the past. Done some stuff on this cane use, on traffic signals. There's all sorts of things out there, especially if you happen to live near a university that routinely does research or has a vision related program. A lot of times they need to do research.
Needs grants, so yep. They need research studies, and they would need a lot of food. They could use something like Uber Eats, which launched in San Francisco this week.
Oh, Uber
getting
here.
Into the delivery food thing, proving that Uber is a lot more than just ride sharing. And they've been experimenting with different things over a long period of their existence. It seems like they're also sponsoring people, or at least featuring them in ads.
Yeah, there's an ad that went out during the time of the Pan Am Games, which we'll actually talk about a little more later on. An ad that went out featuring Matt Simpson, who is a U.S. Paralympic goalball player who competed in Toronto in the recent tournament. They took silver. They beat Canada in overtime. They lost to Brazil in the finals, but they'll be going to Rio de Janeiro. And there's an interesting promotional piece that came out from Uber with Matt in it, promoting Uber and promoting goalball. Let's listen to a little bit of that.
My name is Matt Simpson, and I'm a blind athlete for the USA.
I discovered the sport of goalball when I was 10 and knew right away that I wanted to be a Paralympic athlete. Before Uber, my life was oftentimes scheduled for me. I could not live the sort of independent, fast-paced lifestyle that I need to live as an athlete without Uber. It's independence, it's dignity in a lot of ways that I'm not relying on other people.
So it's interesting how Uber is using... It's an interesting promotional piece, I guess, is for using, you know, kind of saying how Uber is enabling the lives of blind people, which is, you know, definitely, I mean, there's some definite true statements in there saying, you know, definitely
agreed.
Makes you more independent. And
I use it almost every other day between Uber and Lyft. I do like to race them.
Now,
this one's 7 minutes. Ooh, that one's 9 minutes. Let's go with the 7 minutes.
The timing, I mean, do you find the timing interesting, considering all the other talk about Uber and ride sharing
and the lawsuits and everything else? Yeah. And then you've got all the things that are going on in California and New York. I think it's a company that is... I think Uber is the target company for the sharing economy. It is one of the more successful ones. Yeah. It is one that everybody recognizes, so it has that name recognition, which is going to make it float to the top of story piles, so that way the press is really going to, you know, go around it. But at the same time, I think it's a service that is not matured yet, and I'm sad to see that other things in the same kind of category like Lyft are not making more inroads to be a competitor to them, because we don't necessarily want them to be this dominant force and then wage war upon all users of the service, or end up offending a bunch of the drivers. And then where are we then? I'm very conflicted because I enjoy using Uber and Lyft, and I'm always talking to my drivers just to get a feel for what it's like. Now, with that said, every region is different. So on the East Coast or on the Gulf Coast, I'll have two different sets of conversations with drivers. When we were in San Diego, I had a lot of people who had transplanted to California from other jobs. There was one of the gentlemen, I was going to the hotel, and he was a oil and gas worker from Louisiana. And because the oil and gas area had hit the skids in the Gulf, he actually was an Uber driver. He was out with relatives or friends. And his story is very similar to several people who I've met who have relocated or are becoming extended families with family members and are doing this part time. So it's interesting to see, because now that's become a secondary form of income for them, as well as being a primary form of transportation. Now, we do have a comment from our article on blindbargains.com. Mary says it's a shame that she still runs into some Uber drivers that won't pick her up because of her dog, and she hopes that's rectified soon.
Agreed.
I would definitely say go back and listen to our interview with Mike May from NFB convention. He addressed as part of that and gives you some resources on where you can address some of that information to, especially if they cancel on you and you're charged, because you don't want that. You don't have to. And Uber is trying to crack down on that. It's a regional situation. And of course, we've talked about this on previous podcasts. They don't completely fall within ADA. And that is still yet to be kind of worked out, because are they truly employees or private contractors and private vehicles? And
they say that. I still don't. To me, they do entirely. But, the court's going to figure this one out, and then there's a lot of questions.
Well, you know, there'll be an Apple self-driving car soon enough, and that'll be just fine. And it'll be all ADA compatible. It'll have voiceover. You know, I can't wait till they announce that officially, so I can see 50 zillion people on Twitter go, "Does it have voiceover? Does the Apple car have voice? Is it accessible? Is it?" Yes, but you do not want to see what the square trade is on it. It's really bad. No, I'm kidding.
Well. No. See, this is going to happen. They're going to put voiceover on the Apple car for accessibility. Of course, blind people aren't going to be able to drive, but some blind person is going to assume, because there's voiceover on it, that it's also accessible driving.
Sure.
They're going to crash, sue Apple. Yeah, yep. Boy.
Apple Maps.
That's,
I said square trade. AI squared has two, count them, two wonderful posts up about how to upgrade yourself to Windows 10. And definitely check that out if you are a WindowWise or ZoomText user. And if you're wanting some resources, again, I point to one of the posts I've done about a bunch of resources for Windows 10, and more to come. Links. Yeah, just a
not
little
10,000
bit.
Not 10,000 links?
Not 10,000 words. No, I think it was like 4,632.
Ooh,
thank you.
Wow.
Characters. Characters.
Oh,
thank
characters.
You.
Oh, characters. Oh, that's how you make it.
Yeah,
I see. Mark Solomon did these videos. The first one is really short, and it's kind of the intro, what you need to know. The second one is way more in depth and just a lot of the process of the whole thing. And even if you don't run WindowWise, most of the info is still going to apply to you anyway. So if you just want to see someone upgrading to Windows 10 and how it might happen, we've linked to those on Blind Bargains. You can check them out. And they're very well done, and they are closed captioned as well. So you can do it that way as well.
There are important keystrokes like Windows A that'll get you to the Action Center, and Windows C, which will get you to Cortana, but used to be a JAWS command. Remember that? Windows Clipboard? I remember that. JAWS has like 400 keystrokes. No, really. They have like lots of contextual keystrokes. Stephen Faulkner tweeted out a link to 400 massive numbers of JAWS keystrokes. So if you weren't really sure, or you needed a cheat sheet and you didn't want to go through settings, or Settings Center, you could actually go down here. This is actually kind of good for trainers to kind of sort of bookmark and come back to. And it's a neat thing to have. And I can't recommend things like this enough. We don't really do resources a lot. It's more what we would write for the website. But this one was so good, I thought it had to make into the news lineup just to let people know that this is out there. And if you're trying to look up something very specific in Excel or Word, this is a good way of being able to find it.
400. All right, there'll be a quiz next week.
That's what Eric Dammer used to say in presentations. In fact, he was always impressed when somebody could come up with an obscure keystroke when in the middle of a demo. So I've seen that happen once.
That's
or twice.
Amazing. I guess because a lot of them are multi-part, multi-key things, right? Because that's
and that's not including somebody scripting specific keystrokes in or
yeah, specific app things
using something like Leesy
and some of the others something. Too. Well. Are those all JAWS keystrokes in that list? Because like sometimes I will see like, oh, I'm going to press the Windows D. That's the JAWS command for desktop.
Yeah, no, I've seen that too. But have you ever looked at the table for just the Excel commands in JAWS or hit insert F1, F1? Because there is a lot. There is a whole lot.
Yeah, a lot of these are just Windows commands.
Yeah, some of them are and some of them are not. But JAWS does have a lot of specific ones for reading cells and reading some things when you're in PowerPoint.
And I wonder if it has more than Office. That's the longest list I've seen before is the Office keyboard shortcut list. Where they have like, and of course, Office does, and a lot of the really cool programs, Reaper comes to mind as an audio editing tool where you can take any possible function in the program, even including those that don't have hotkeys, and assign a hotkey to them. Those are really cool. And you can assign multiple hotkeys to the same functions. It's pretty cool. I love the programs that offer that level of configurability. It's really cool.
I'm going to get away from hotkeys because all I've seen for the last 3 weeks are people complaining about Windows 10 upgrade and their Twitter client on Windows. So, yeah, remapping hotkeys is something I've read a lot about recently.
All right. Let's remap the show.
People. remapping the show. That's a neat idea. We could say, I don't know, come out of a break and stick in an interview and then maybe a tip and sound off and last word. Wait, that's not really remapping. That's our same format.
That's rehashing.
Rats.
Close.
Oh, I thought I found something there.
Oh, you had it, man. We'll have more whatever is remapped or rehashed coming up after this from Hims.
Hims is proud to present Smart Beetle, our ultra-portable 14-cell Braille display. Smart Beetle is pocket-sized and packed with power. Smart Beetle can connect to 6 devices simultaneously, flip between your iPhone, computer, and other screens without having to reconnect. And Smart Beetle, through its Bluetooth keyboard emulator, allows you to write in contracted Braille on items such as Android devices that otherwise wouldn't support it. Want to know more? Call Hims at 888-520-4467 or visit our website at www.hims-inc.com. Hims, Your needs are our solutions.
Welcome back to episode number 28 of the BBcast for the middle of August 2015. And we are just fresh off the Pan Am Games, which recently took place in Toronto. We were talking about that a little bit earlier regarding Uber and GoBall and Matt Simpson and a whole bunch of different things. But we want to talk to someone who was actually at the Pan Am Games and has a lot to do with accessibility in Canada. David Leposky is the chair of the Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act Alliance, or EODAA. No, that's not.
I know, too many A's. A.
yeah, there's this eh? Anyway, but David, welcome to the podcast.
Great to be on the podcast. I'm a big fan.
So the email exchange started out between me and you earlier today, where you wrote us and drew our attention to some things that were happening at the Pan Am Games regarding live audio narration of some of the events. So you were there. How did that work out?
This was actually really quite cool. I've been leading the cause that led to the enactment of our equivalent of Your Americans with Disabilities Act 10 years ago. And since then, I lead the coalition that tries to get that law effectively implemented. I myself am a lawyer and am totally blind. And one of the things that we decided to focus on as a way to try to leverage more accessibility in our community here for people with all disabilities was the Pan American and Para Pan American Games here in Toronto that just took place. Just so people know, because I didn't know much about this stuff, this is like the precursor to the Olympics. People who are competing from North and South America to get to qualify for the Olympics and for the Paralympics. So they ran a couple of weeks of games for the mainstream sports. That's the Pan American Games. And then there were the Para Pan American Games. And there were, I don't know, 16 or 18 or 20, I can't remember how many different sports. And 1,600 athletes from all over North and South America. And I and my coalition were advocating on a number of fronts to make sure that the games themselves are accessible, but also to make sure or try to get the government to increase accessibility in our community for tourists and athletes with disabilities who came here. Now, we didn't get a lot of mileage on out of the government on increasing accessibility in the community, but what I wrote you about, what I'd love to talk about, is one area where we really did score. We approached the government at the highest levels and the leadership of the organizing committee that ran the games a few months ago. We said, you know what, we'd love to be there cheering for the Canadian para athletes, but if you're blind as I am, you're going to be in the stands and you're not going to know if you're winning or losing. So what, and these games don't have the kind of live radio broadcast like if you go to a Major League Baseball game. So what do you do? They said to me, what should we do? And we said, how about if you were to try to provide some kind of live audio description, at least some of the competitions? And we said, it doesn't have to be top pro radio quality. Just, pardon me, someone who lets us know some of what's going on. Well, they listened and they did. They picked three sports to provide this for. One was goalball, which is, for those who don't know, and I just been learning about it and now want to try it. It's a ball that's like a basketball, and it's a unique game designed for blind people. You've got to be blind and you've got to be blindfolded. So if a sighted person plays, though in the Para Pan American Games, obviously they're all visually impaired, but outside of that, if a sighted person plays, they got to be blindfolded and everybody's on a level playing field because no one can see anything. The second sport was wheelchair basketball, which is obviously quite popular. And the third was judo. Now, I didn't get to judo because, unfortunately, where they had it playing was about an hour from my home, and I just didn't want to schlep out there for it, which is too much time involved. But I did go to the basketball competition at one point, and I did go to the finals for bronze and gold medal, bronze, silver, and gold for goalball men and women. And it was really cool. Let me tell you a bit of what happened. First, the basketball took place in what's left of our old Maple Leaf Gardens where the Toronto Maple Leafs used to play. I used to go to hockey games there as a kid. Now, the ground level is a grocery store, and they made a basketball or other kind of competition area out of an upper level. So you went there, and you got in your seat. But before you did, you went and picked up an FM receiver, and you put in your earplugs. and our earphones, and there were a couple of people in a booth that were broadcasting. And because it's Canada, we had to do it in English and French, which is a good idea. And so they actually had some French broadcasts. I think they were just doing simultaneous translation of the English narration. There were two people doing the English narration, and they were doing...
So you would choose the channel, the English or French,
yeah,
you would want
the button
on your headset?
It was all very easy to use. You push the button for English or for French. And same thing when I went to goalball, which was at a different stadium altogether. But let me start with basketball. So there, and I don't particularly know the rules of basketball. It's just not a sport that I'm that into. So I got briefed a little before I got there. And they were narrating the plays, and they were adding the kind of narrative you would need to know more of what's going on. And they also were reinforcing for you, you know, knowing the different rules of wheelchair basketball compared to basketball for people who are not in a wheelchair. For example, in basketball for people who can walk, you can take two steps with the ball, and then you've got a shoot or pass or whatever, or it's called traveling. With a wheelchair, they can do two wheel motions. And that could be one, both turning the wheel, or one is spinning the wheel to move, and one turning your wheelchair. And after that, you can get a penalty. Anyway, they're doing all of this narration, which is amazing. But also, when there was off time, like when the clock had stopped, they narrated, and this is unlike anything you'll ever get on a broadcast, like a Major League Baseball broadcast. They were providing live descriptive audio of what was on the screen. You know, there's the big monitor there, and there's, you know, people being shown in the crowd cheering, or they zoom in on someone who's, you know, picking their nose or whatever, and they're narrating all this. I never knew half of that stuff
before. I was wondering, that was the exact question I was going to ask, is how would this differ? Would it just be like listening to it on TV or in the radio at home? But that makes it a lot different, yeah.
And they were, it was fabulous. And then, but what happened was after, I watched two games in the evening. One was... between Mexico and I think it was Colombia. It's so hard to remember who against who because there were so many games I watched. But in any event, it was a really intense game. And then after that, they took a break for halftime and while they were for between the games. And the guys who did the audio description said, "Hey, if anybody's listening to us, come on up and meet us. We're in room whatever." So I went up there, introduced myself, got a couple of pictures with them, which I tweeted out, got their Twitter handles so I could tweet what a great job they're doing. I got a chance to chat with them. And one was somebody who does audio description. Another one is somebody who's studying sports broadcasting. So for them, it was a great learning opportunity.
That's a great combination of people.
Oh, it was fantastic.
Someone who knows audio and someone who knows sports. I mean, that's a good...
And they also, they were asking me for feedback. So a couple points I said, I wasn't quite sure what you meant by so-and-so. So they appreciated that, and on it went. So off the next day, I go to goalball. And so now they're narrating, it's a different couple of guys because they're at a different venue, and they're narrating a sport that I knew nothing about. And there was a bigger turnout of blind folks there in the audience, of visually impaired people, probably because of the fact that it's a blindness-related sport.
Yeah.
And again, they did a fabulous job of narrating. And it was a situation where you can't turn to the person next to you and ask what's going on anyway, because during goal ball, when the ball's in play, you have to be silent. Because otherwise, yes, you'll throw off the blind players. And in fact, when the referee calls a play, they always say, "Quiet, please," and they blow their whistle and they say, "Play." So you got to shut up, and you can't have somebody telling you what's going on. So you needed your earphones. They also provided live audio description at the opening ceremonies, which I went to, and the closing I didn't. But they provided those in English and in French and in Spanish. So I go to the opening ceremonies a week and a half ago, and they were narrating even before and they did for English, French, and Spanish, because in this case, A, you got a wider audience, and B, a number of the people who ended up getting the receivers were the athletes. There were a lot of blind athletes there and visually impaired athletes. I never thought of this when I first proposed that they they provide the audio description. But if you think about it, the athletes are out there. If they're visually impaired, they wouldn't know a lot of what's going on if it's non-visual. There were videos that were part of the ceremony. There were dances that were part of the ceremony. And the audio description covered all of that. The other thing they did for about an hour of the opening ceremonies is just the procession of athletes. It's 1,600 athletes from whatever, 20-some-odd countries. And the audio description included talking about the choreography, how they're doing it, the fact that there were volunteers in a line on either side of them who were dancing, describing who was dancing and who wasn't, what they were wearing, the different outfits that, you know, the Mexicans had sombreros, what colors they were each wearing. A number of the athletes from different countries were dancing up a storm. When the Americans came in, the narrator mentioned that the Americans all looked very serious and weren't dancing. I guess I wouldn't have known this stuff. And they were talking about how many there were. You know, some of the contingents were huge, like the Canadian, the American, the Brazilian. Some were tiny from some of the other countries. There's like 3 or 4 guys who came in blue jeans and a shirt with a pin on it or something. So that was really cool. One of the challenges that I foresaw the day I went to the opening, and it was fortunate, was that the description would be great, but the music would be blaring at the event, and I might have trouble hearing it.
Oh, right.
So I actually thought ahead, and I brought noise-canceling earphones. And it's a good thing I did, because at the opening ceremony, I needed them. At the basketball game, I needed them because it was such a loud, echoey room and they blare music on and off at various points. And even at goal ball, I needed them because the moment you really care about is when they score. And when they scored, the crowd's allowed to cheer. And as soon as the crowd's cheering, you can't hear the narrator explaining what happened in the play. So fortunately, I brought noise-canceling headphones.
That makes a lot of sense. Where are the, for goalball especially, where are the announcers? Because they can't be talking either.
They're in a booth up in the media area that's like a couple of floors up, and they are...
Okay. Are they whispering for goalball or talking at normal speed?
No, they're talking full blast because
because they're blocked off.
They're blocked off, and you got earphones on, so you're fine. Now, I got to tell you two interesting sidelights on this, and I've been very critical, and my coalition of the game's organizers on a number of issues. On the one I'm about to mention, I'm not. We've been congratulating the heck out of them on providing this audio description because they deserve it. It really was a new innovation, and we're hoping this is going to be the new standard for any future Olympics and Paralympics anywhere. But one of the things, I was sitting at the wheelchair basketball game, and I'm chatting with a friend who happened to run into there, and I told them I was going to be listening to this live audio description. They said, man, I'd like to hear that too. And I thought to myself at the time, it's too bad others don't know about it. Well, it turned out, and I only found this out at the end, during goalball, that they were actually broadcasting on an FM frequency that you could pick up on any FM radio. And so I'm suggesting that they, in the future, if they do this, they should announce to everybody, not just people with vision loss, because let everybody else enjoy it, benefit from it, and also let's show other people what blind people and people with vision loss benefit from, like when they're narrating what's up there on the screen. So that was one thing.
Makes a lot of sense.
The other story, and this is a story that started out like it could be a really bad one, but turned into a really good one. So I'd heard that I knew that they were broadcasting or doing audio description for the wheelchair basketball. So I actually got tickets to 2 rounds, one in the morning last Thursday and one in the evening last Thursday. And when I got there in the morning, it's 8 in the morning, and I got there with a friend of mine who's sighted, and we're asking, where's the live audio? Just where do I get my headphones? And they said, oh, we don't provide it in the morning. We only provide it in the evening. Now, I must have screwed up and not read the schedule correctly of when they were providing it, when they're not. I'm not blaming anybody else for that. But I was ready to get all sort of fuming about, oh, man, I came here expecting audio description, and whether I screwed up or not, I'm not going to have it. But I walked up to one of the volunteers and connected up. There were 1 million volunteers at the games. They had 23,000 volunteers for all of the games all over the place to guide people and help people out and stuff. So I cornered one that I knew, and I had them connect me up with somebody else that was more senior. And I said, look, I know you don't provide live audio description, but just could you find a volunteer who like knows basketball? Would they maybe just sit with me and say what's going on? And if they didn't, I was going to be completely understanding. This was just you know, me just throwing it at them at the last second. But they came back to me a couple of minutes later and said, we found someone. And they got one of the volunteers who clearly knew something about wheelchair basketball, and she sat next to me. And she was giving me, like, she said, what do you want to know? And I sort of said, everything, because I don't know how the game is played.
Right, you so never watched it
before. She's narrating. And then a couple of minutes later, one of the organizers came over and said, somebody else wants this narrative too. Do you mind if we bring someone else over? There's a blind fellow who was backpacking across North America, came to Toronto, and decided to come to the games. I met him because he ended up sitting on the other side of my narrator. And so she's talking, and we're both listening. And this fellow and I became friends because he's interested in accessibility issues, as am I. And this was all, like, initially I was going to get all flummoxed that I was there with no audio description, and it turned out I got audio description.
A really cool story, yeah.
And if anybody follows my Twitter handle is at David Lepofsky. It's Lepofsky. But I was live tweeting while this was happening. I got a picture of this woman. Her name is Chantal. And I got a picture of Chantal narrating to me and this other fellow.
That's really cool.
Told all the story. And by the way, you know, the people running the Pan and Para Pan American Games, obviously they're very sensitive to media coverage and stuff. And I'm using the hashtag Para Pan Am. Later that day, when I was back for the evening where they had live audio description, Chantal saw me, came over and said, hi. I said, I've been tweeting about you. She said, oh, I know. They told me. You know, clearly word got around. Anyway, that was cool. The other thing I'll just tell you quickly about the games, if any people get a chance to go to games like this, it really is an amazing experience. I'll just tell you about two other really quick things. I went to blind soccer. It's five people a side. They call it football, but it's soccer. I had a friend who was sighted who was quietly narrating to me because they didn't have audio description, and I knew that in advance. But I had hoped that I was going to be able to follow the what was going on by listening to the guys, the players, but it was two teams, what was it, Mexico and Uruguay. I can't remember. It's two of the Central or South American teams. And they're all yelling to each other in Spanish, so I couldn't possibly figure out who's who from this. But it was a lot of fun. I will tell you, with wheelchair basketball, if I didn't have the narrative on, if I didn't have the earphones on when Chantal was narrating, I could pick up a fair amount. Not everything, but I could hear the ball bouncing to figure out where it was. I could hear the ball hitting the hoop if they hit the ring, but not in. And wheelchairs on a gymnasium-type floor make a lot of noise. So I could tell where all the chairs were as they were moving, which was actually really cool to reinforce what this kind woman was narrating to me. I went to wheelchair tennis, and it was singles. Again, I had a sighted friend who was narrating to me personally. But, you know, once you know the sound of a tennis ball either bouncing on the floor on the court or hitting a racket, you could follow a volley back and forth pretty easily. And you could tell how those wheelchairs were being moved by where they were hitting from. After that round was over, it was an American woman in the semifinals against a woman from Chile. The woman from Chile gave like a grunt or whatever when she was hitting the ball. So I never had any concern about where she was, but you could tell from the impact of the racket. Anyway, on the way out, we talked our way into meeting the American who won. She was now in her regular wheelchair, but let me check out her tennis wheelchair. And if you've never seen one of these, there's nothing like anything you've ever seen. They've got the regular wheels. They're very trim. They're very light. But then they have five roller skate type wheels, two at the back, two at the front, and one front and center. The other thing, and they're quite, you just touch them and they change direction. At former Maple Leaf Gardens, where they had wheelchair basketball, they had a room where anyone could check out a basketball wheelchair. And so I was sitting in one trying to whip around a little bit and trying to see if I could catch a ball or bounce a ball just in a sitting position because it's so totally different. So there were really interesting opportunities like that you could avail yourself of even when there isn't audio description.
As far as the description itself, do you know, like, was any of that archived or is it available for anybody?
I don't think so. I don't know. It would have been really cool. I mean, my long-term goal, if this, you know, Toronto's now talking about should we bid for the Olympics, and there was all sorts of issues surrounding that. But if we did, I'd be urging them to actually stream it live.
Right.
so that everybody could enjoy it, whether they're there, whether they're not there, whether they whether it's on the occasion or later.
Well, like you said too, it is a different it's a different type of description in some ways, though, having it in person versus what you would hear on a TV, even if it's described. So, you know. But
you know. Well, you know, baseball and TV, they're busy, you know, yabbering away,
no.
Knowing that the audience is watching. But lots of sighted people I know will turn down the sound on the television set when they're watching baseball and turn up the radio,
yep,
because the narrative is more descriptive.
Well, and it all depends on the broadcasters, too. I've heard really good baseball broadcasters on TV and really bad ones, and the same goes with radio. So I think, you know, a lot of times it's just about how it's described and the information you get, but it's always really interesting to see it done in new ways, especially for live events, which is something that's been done in a few places, for Broadway and some other stuff. But this is definitely, you're right, it's definitely a first here, which is really cool for you to be a part of.
The thing about Broadway, they can script it. In this case, like when they were doing the opening ceremonies, it was clear that they had scripted the narrative for the videos. Or for the dances, I would expect that the narrators got to go to the rehearsals to sort of see what was going on, or I'm sort of inferring that, but it sure sounded like that. But other stuff they were doing just extemporaneously, you know, there, as the 1600 wheelchair, or maybe para athletes were coming in, there were a couple of them fell out of their chairs during the procession, and they narrate this and narrate them getting back in. One of the things that you learn while listening to the narrative on the wheelchair basketball is there's an etiquette that if somebody falls out of a chair during the play, others help them in from both teams. There's no partisanship. Everybody is, it's all hands on deck to help them out. They were narrating how they got them into the chair. Like sometimes they would just, if they were on their back, they would be, or on their stomach, they'd flip them on their, the coach would flip them on the back and then the athlete would get in themselves. They were narrating differences like that. The other thing they did, oh, this is cool. Because I was at the goal ball finals, I watched, for the men's goal ball, I watched the Canadian team beat the Argentina team for the bronze. And then the final round was the U.S. versus Brazil. Sorry to tell you, Brazil clobbered both
teams. Yeah, they did. That happens often.
But after it was over, we then got to watch the medals be awarded. So the narrators and were describing how they guide all the players off the court. While, by the way, the music is blaring at deafening levels. And then they narrated setting up the podiums for the awards, and then they narrated the whole choreography of the awards. They also, at the end of each game, they would narrate the players going over and shaking each other's hands and hugging each other. It was amazing how the teams were very warm, not just sort of officially shaking hands, but actually very warm to each other in the aftermath at the end.
Did you get any sort of read on how many people took advantage of the service during the week? Have you heard any numbers?
I asked about this. So I know that at the opening ceremonies, I'm told that there were a couple of hundred given out to the athletes, because I talked to somebody who was working there. But I asked one of the volunteers how many were given out to the audience, and it was like 17, which was, for hundreds of people there, seemed to me pretty low. But they hadn't announced it over the PA system. If you didn't know, you wouldn't know. If you didn't know, you wouldn't know to ask. So I actually got home that night and emailed a very senior official I've been dealing with at the 2015 organizing committee and said, you really should announce this. In fact, I also tweeted that they really weren't announcing its availability, and they should. And I saw on chatter on Twitter later that they were announcing its availability, and at goal ball they did. At basketball, they said only four or five early on. I don't know about later. Now, I was told that it was considerably more at the goal ball games. I said basketball, it was lower, but
when that makes sense, like you said, lots of blind athletes. I would imagine even some of the athletes, if it wasn't their game, might
possibly.
Yeah.
But I was there with a friend who was sighted. If we saw anybody look visually impaired, we just went over and said, by the way, you know about the audio and every audio description, and everybody said, yeah. I mean, it was commonly known.
Awesome.
Which was great. So there was it was a tremendous experience. It really made you be able to get into the game. And imagine going to a sport you knew nothing about.
Yeah.
Other than maybe reading the rules on the way in. And yet being able to pick it up and get into the excitement of it very quickly.
Well, it's really cool. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing that experience. It sounds like it's a one of a kind thing, and maybe as we look towards Rio in 2016, something we might hear more of, or perhaps it gets expanded. It sounds like a great pilot project, and glad that you were able to be a part of it.
great to talk to you about it. If people want to know more about what we're doing on accessibility here in Ontario,
yes, please do.
Follow me on Twitter. It's at David, LEPOFSKY. My coalition, which has a crazy long name, is the Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act Alliance. You can read, go to our website. It's www.aodaalliance.org. And if you're really keen, we send out email updates of what we're up to once or twice a week. And we got people receiving our email updates all around the world. We get feedback from people all around the world. They have, hey, you're trying this. We tried that. It didn't work. Why don't you do this differently? So you might want to sign up for our email updates. To do that, just send an email saying, sign me up. That's all I need. And the email address is aodafeedback@gmail.com. I'll repeat that. It's aodafeedback@gmail.com. And just say, sign me up. And we'll sign you up for our emails.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on.
Great. Thanks.
Coming up, we have Sound Off, Last World, the end of 13 records, tapes, or CDs for a penny. It's the death of Columbia House and much more after this tip. Here's a tip that might help you eat a little bit healthier. It's a website called Eat This, Not That. And it's at www.eatthis.com, EATTHIS.com. It's a website chock full of information about health tips and foods that you should eat instead of other foods. For instance, an article up there recently, Why Bacon is Better Than Tilapia. I haven't read that one yet, but that would be an interesting read for sure. The site looks at lots of things like fast food places and what might be better to eat than other things. For instance, if you order breakfast sandwiches at McDonald's, ask for the round egg on your sandwiches. If you don't, you kind of get this egg gelatinous mixture stuff, which has things like propylene glycol in it. That's an antifreeze. You might not want that on your sandwich. But if you ask for the round egg, they'll actually put an actual egg on your breakfast sandwich. Go figure. What an actual improvement there. Of course, it's a health nut site, so you have to take everything that you read with a grain of salt because, you know, they're trying to scare you in some ways, and everything is bad for you sometimes, and everything is not always as bad as they may seem. So sometimes I take things with a grain of salt. But still, it's a really cool resource for information, lots of cool articles that you can read. Again, it's at eatthis.com, EATTHIS.com. Send your tips to feedback@blindbargains.com.
It's your turn to sound off. Email feedback at blindbargains.com or tweet us at blindbargains.
We asked for your comments in episode 27 in order to be a part of the Great Jet Giveaway. And by that, I don't mean vacation or anything, unless you like a vacation from shopping. Look what I did there. That's awesome.
Great.
You still have time to be able to get in on that. So going back to episode 27 really? To put your comments in before, what was the drop down date? What was it? August?
It August 21st. So
if you're listening to this on August 22nd, just put the comments right here in this episode. That'd be great.
I mean, you pretty much, if you downloaded this right away and you listened right away, then you didn't get in the last one. They need to be in 27, but we'll have more contests too if you're listening later on. So,
well, John Wesley left us a comment. He wasn't really interested in being a part of the comments for the giveaway, but he did want to make a comment about food. And have we ever tried putting candy corn in with a bowl of peanuts?
No, this is tagging on to last week's discussion after you were knocked off the show
By lightning, which may happen again. So that's why I'm going a little faster than usual, folks. Thank you, Storms.
If you send me candy corn and peanuts, I'll try it. I'm not buying.
You'll give it a shot.
Going to the expense.
How about candy corn Oreos? I've had those. Those are not good.
Okay,
no?
You can do this test. If you want to do candy corn and peanuts.
By the way, for the podcast listener at home, I would not be interested in pumpkin spice peeps. That didn't sound good at all, actually.
No.
It didn't sound good when I put it in the show notes. It didn't sound good after you, Patrick, talked about it. It
doesn't matter how you talk about it. It still sounds awful.
Lewis left us a great big comment about how it's difficult for blindness note takers, and he gets into the prices and support and why there are still some reasons why he would use a blindness note taker. He gives some use cases there. I would agree with a lot of these. And, you know, a lot of deaf blind individuals, especially if they're not very technical or feel comfortable on a touchscreen, do like blindness note takers. There is a market for them. There are people who do go to the users group meetings, either for HIMSS or HumanWare or what have you, There are still fans of actual physical note takers. Yep. The cost is prohibitive. Yep. Yeah, it might be using an older operating system. But the people who really like those devices, their quick turn on or their ease of use, or
if it's your only method of communicating, just especially like for deaf blind. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yes. I could see that. Absolutely.
Russ left us a comment about a Jim Kitchens game for iOS. I guess that could happen. I mean, it'd be the Destino games version, where, you know, have you ever played Destino?
Yeah. Oh, the old Richard Destino. Richard Destino was kind of moving some of his games. Destination Mars, right?
Way back right. when. And those are available for free on iOS. If you didn't already know about those folks, you can actually get that and do Ticket to the Moon and some of those.
There's a guy that was helping out Jim with some of the programming. So we don't know if no one's talked to him, I don't think. So we don't know if he still has access to the code or what's up with that. He has the website, so we don't know. And it doesn't seem like that would happen. I'd be curious if any Jim Kitchen unfinished games, you know, like they're, you know, we have for like books or authors that have died. The last, I don't know, you know, maybe there'll be one new title that'll pop out in a year or so. It could be interesting. I don't think it's going to happen on the iPhone.
KACH2, speech might have eaten that. So if that's a screen name, I apologize ahead of time. Left us a comment about some of the use cases that are involved in scripting and why free screen readers are great, but there is still a need for scripting in, say, a company that does office document management or heavy literary type work. That makes a lot of sense. And it gets into some of the stuff we were talking about on previous shows about why some people even have scripters on retainer, even IBM, who is looking all into getting Macs for people and going towards Ubuntu for servers and stuff. They still have a lot of JAWS on computers and they still use a scripter for some of that work. And they're not the only ones. Hospitals, sometimes medical transcriptionists, and other call centers have a tendency to do that. And I use NVDA. I've been using NVDA full time since December. There's nothing wrong with NVDA in that respect, but there are some things that paid screen readers have because of legacy a lot more experience at. Doesn't mean it's, you know, that gap is not narrowing. It is.
Right.
But there are just some things that work out better.
But I wonder about scripting though. Okay. So that claim that you can't script as much, I'm not sure how founded that claim is. I'd love to talk to anyone who does scripting or has tried or has written scripts for NVDA versus JAWS versus others. Are there parts of the screen or the things that JAWS gives you access to with scripting that NVDA doesn't, or, you know, that Windows doesn't? Like, how does it compare? Because obviously NVDA is in Python pretty much. So you can write anything for it. But, you know, are there things that you can't script? Or is that a misnomer, or is that a true statement still in 2015? I don't know.
Jeff Armstrong wrote back and said he's using Intuit's Tax Deluxe, and he doesn't think that there's a comparable online version, but he uses that and reads a few lines at a time, but it works for him. And he talks a little bit more about that on blindbargains.com under episode 27. So there's another one of those individuals giving us an idea of what they use and how they use it. In regards to scripting and the like, again, short of learning how to do it yourself, and there's nothing wrong with that concept either, there are just some things that become detrimental over time. And it's either upon the work site to go with a more static program that would work for everybody, because you could make the argument that, you know, sighted individuals would like stability just as much as blind individuals. And so stop moving that around, that kind of thing. It really does come down to the employer, how comfortable they feel about it and where they are. You know, I have a lot of experience in that area of working with the Division for Blind Services. So I've done that once or twice with many number of employers. In banking, though, it's a whole nother thing, or even oil and gas. When I've worked with people in the oil and gas industry, they're under some DOD restrictions in banking. They're under some SEC restrictions, and there might be changes in the rules, or there might be changes in the software, especially in banking where there's lots of corporate and personal tax changes, and that software can get rewritten. And it's really hard for individuals who want to do that for a living. And they may start off working in those institutions and then may go private after they've got the experience of knowing what it's like to work in those situations. I'm thinking of Attachmate and other things over the years that have been worked out. And back then, you really didn't have many, you know, situations. It was like, okay, well, let's load up this. Okay, let's put JAWS in there. Ooh, okay, well, it was nice, and I love your coffee, and we'll be in touch. Bye. You know, so it can be very, very difficult. I also think of one time we did a testing for a very large cellular telephone carrier, and the consumer was really good and gotten their own job, and the counselor was supporting them, and they had flown through all the preliminary stuff. But when we went there to work on the computers, one of their corporate trainers pulled me aside and said, "We really like this person and they're really excelling, but can you help us figure out how to make this accessible?" And they brought up a coverage map with zones like you, and remember, this is like early 2000s, so there was a lot of roaming still.
Yeah.
And here was red for your area and blue for what you couldn't do without roaming. And I just went, ooh, no. back in the day, that was just not really going to be possible. And it changed because it was going to be a national call center. So you never really, you couldn't memorize it to say, okay, that's this coverage map and that's that coverage map.
You used to have to keep calling them and checking on that.
Yeah.
And then after it was cellular and roaming, then it was which spaces have 3G or, you know, any of those, you know, EBDO, whatever it was at the time. And you kept calling, and every time you called, talk to a rep, you get a different answer. So, you know, they could have done that job. They just made up an answer like everybody else did. But yeah.
Greg wrote in and he gave some ideas about how to make things a little easier to navigate in Windows 10. And he had talked about shift tabbing from the open start menu and going to the all apps button. And once when you're in the all apps, you're in the recently added section. And this lists the recently added or updated apps, which is pretty helpful. He mentions also that it kind of goes into a list tab of sorts. He gives the instructions on how to do all of this, and that'll be in the show notes for this episode, but we're also there on 27, or excuse me, AT Trainers, on the AT Trainers episode. I like that. I've actually been using Windows E and the recent files more than I thought I would. That behavior has changed. If you're in Windows 8 and you do Windows E, you'll go to this PC. Now, you can change that. I actually have a link to an article that you can do that in the next Windows 10 article. But I found myself actually just typing this PC, those two letters together, to get to this PC, because I don't really want to change Windows E because I go to a lot of files. Like, let's say I find a Windows 10 resource and I don't remember where I saved the Windows 10 article, then it's like having a gigantic pin board where you just do Windows E and it has your last reviewed documents and folders. Kind of like the way we used to do Windows down arrow R right arrow, you know, kind of a recent list.
Oh gosh, yeah.
Yeah, so there's that. But you do Windows E and then you first letter navigate because your focus goes into this list. And so, you know, I would do Windows E and then W and Windows 10 articles, enter, and there I am. And that's really helpful. If you're saving things in OneDrive, that's really helpful, because if you're going from multiple computer to computer and you don't always want to bring up the OneDrive app or hit Windows, type in OneDrive, hit enter, and then go into your OneDrive folder, it is a great way of being able to do that as well. But if you're not really sure what apps are on a computer, what Greg is talking about here will allow you to see all your apps at once. And there's no real first letter navigation there, but you can arrow through those and hear them in alphabetical order to hear what's new, especially if you are using Windows Home, Windows 10 Home, because your apps are going to update automatically from the store. And store apps are interesting. That's your mail app or your TV and movies app or things like that. But you're probably better off from an accessibility standpoint using Outlook or some other thing. There's still Thunderbird and other email clients out there. Kevin Berry also left a comment saying that I should have gone out into the hallway during the Windows 10 presentation and made a comment about Mark Solomon's presentation. Kevin, I always love your honesty, man. That's all I'm going to say. That's fantastic. Kevin, Mark and I actually worked on that presentation together, and Mark is a good friend of mine, and I've worked with Mark before, as well as a lot of people over at AI Squared. And I'm also known for doing Windows. In fact, I've spoken in front of Computer Science 6 times on Windows, I think, and various places. And I'm also vice president of AT Trainers. So in that regard, I wasn't a podcaster. I actually was someone working with trainers. So I apologize if you were misconstrued about what the comments were aimed at in that presentation. And so what we don't misconstrued very often is Twitter. We get some direct conversations from people. No, hardly ever on Twitter. Actually, Twitter's been a very good, a great way to get instant dialogue and conversations.
Oh, it's always fun. Yeah, it's always fun. Some questions that have been going on over the past week. Jason Smith asking, is anyone still selling any of the talking microwaves besides the $350 version? We aren't aware. There used to be that nice little $70, $60 one that a lot of people were picking up from Hamilton Beach. Remember that thing? I saw one. It was really cool. Wish I would have bought it at the time. To my knowledge, there's nothing. So if anyone knows of anything else, let us know, because that would be awesome. We also asked for suggestions. We do that from time to time for suggestions of future shows. We have one from Rick. So he'd love to hear a good demo of people using Windows tablets with JAWS, NVDA, and Narrator with their respective touch support.
Patrick adores using his Windows tablet. Insert snarky Patrick comment here, more than likely.
No.
No, that's actually a good thing, because there is a limited amount of RAM on the tablets versus a big system. My core traveling laptop is an i3 with 6 gigs of RAM. And I notice it working a lot different than my Surface Pro 2 with 8 gigs of RAM. And
that's the thing about these $90 tablets. It's kind of like buying the cheap Android ones. I'm not so sure that's the best idea, but who knows? I don't know.
Well, and we get back to that conversation we were having with Alex last week, in which it could just be a dumb terminal and just grab other more powerful systems.
Right. You
know? I do that all the time.
Jan Brown says, look, perhaps more cooking demos or more everyday things, people things to help people out, or things they might not know how to do. Or hey, I haven't seen you cook yet, Joe.
There may be a good reason for that. It's not as exciting to hear it go into the microwave. No, actually, I did make something.
What's a demo, Siri calling 911 or whatever?
Yeah, that was it. No, I made something the other day, and the family was kind of like, what? And I was like, you know, they were like, well, what is it? I said, well, if it works out really good, it's going to be dinner. If not, it's going to be me calling whatever various pizza place we like, and that'll be me cooking dinner. I used to be a lot better. When I had more sight, I was more confident in the kitchen. I'm slowly getting back into doing more kitchen stuff lately. And I have done demos on stuff in the past. I've actually recommended Tupperware-like objects and coffee makers. I've done demonstrations
Coffee, of coffee makers. Yeah, I can see you doing coffee.
Me? Coffee? What are you talking about? There's a cup right here. I don't know what it is. Coffee's great.
Scott Rutkowski says, keep up the great work of the podcast, guys. Really enjoying it immensely.
Thank you
so much, Scott. And thank you to everyone who writes us on Twitter at Blind Bargains, or, of course, email feedback@blindbargains.com, or post on the show notes. Those of you who did that for 27, you see how easy it is to do. And if you are having trouble with that, just let us know. One thing Joe does a lot better than cooking is finding weird stories.
This is true. And as I hear thunder in the background here, I'm going to move right along to there is a thing on YouTube that I thought was kind of neat, and it was the acoustics in a singing cave. And it's a gentleman actually in a cave, and he's kind of singing, and it kind of has a really eerie feeling. And it doesn't sound like you'd put like Marion Hall or Marion Space. It really does have this really unique sound. I wish he had actually used a better sound setup to record this with, but what is here is really kind of spooky, and it's always strange to hear things that are familiar but in different echoey type things. You know, the way some people enjoy hearing themselves sing in the shower. So definitely take a listen to this.
I sound great in the shower. Anywhere else? No. But in the shower.
As I've said before, some people have a face for radio. I have a voice for radio. It was not meant for American Idol. So very rarely, no. Even if you had one of these $350 cables, I don't think it would make me sound any better.
Monster, epic monster, super monster, monster.
I'm guilty of selling people those $300 cables for Monster, for video and stuff, when I was sold the home theater. Back in those days, though, there was something to gold plating and better connectors, because a lot of those connectors on some of the equipment, people would spend a bunch of money on their sound equipment or a bunch of money on their TV, but not a bunch of money on the other half. So they would spend more money on video than audio, or audio than video. And if the connectors were not good enough, sometimes cables with better connectivity would help a little. But then again, back in those days, you know, people are also running cable television through Y splits. So anything was better than.
So you would sell people back in the day, the most expensive, craziest audio cable possible.
Incredible Universe was a member of the Radio Shack / Tandy Corporation, and need I say more?
You sold realistic speakers lot.
With $900 well, cables. You bet.
I bought lots of cables from Radio Shack back. That was the only option because there was no internet.
You know, back then I could recommend to somebody, okay, you just spent a bunch of money on this cable and you just spent a bunch of money. Well, not that much on these speakers, but you just spent a bunch of money and you probably don't have a lot of money to go out to the record store and buy more records. Hey, you probably could use this thing called Columbia Record House.
Well, the Columbia House. Yes.
You could.
You could.
Not anymore.
No. It used to just be a penny, right? One
yeah.
penny.
So you're on your way to buy some music albums. How much money do you have? Only a penny? You're kidding. That won't buy a thing at the store. But here, open this gold box. Just one penny buys one, two, three. Keep going. 13 tapes or 13 records of your choice when you join the Columbia Record and Tape Club.
Oh, let me tell you some of the discs I got through Columbia House back in the 80s when I was working in radio. Midnight Oil, that one, that was a good one, right? I think I got the George Michael record with Freedom on it. Actual physical CDs. I was CD then. I had a CD player.
You were one of the first CD. Because strangely, Columbia House still sold 8-tracks through the club through 87.
You
couldn't get 8-tracks any other way.
Walmart used to sell those like 3 for $1 in the mid-80s too. Because that's how I got Flash Gordon, Queen soundtrack on 8-track, and Grease with right there, Summer Lovin' on an 8-track. The thing about 8-tracks, though, was it was weird because they would have weird fade-outs on songs depending on how mid-track. The record lineup was. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes.
And then it would fade back in on the next track. Yes. It's really Ka-donk. Weird.
You'd have that great big gigantic track noise, you know, and it was always nasty. It was just sounded like you broke something. Ka-donk. You know, it was, oh, dude. And I knew people who had the equivalent of a jam box. So it was an 8-track that would shove in the top of it, but then it would just have that giant round speaker, not stereo, just one giant speaker that would just blare out sound. And they were in the most audacious day glow colors, mostly orange and yellow. I knew a lot of people who had the yellow 8-track player with a great big speaker on it.
But as opposed to CDs, if you didn't like the currently played song, you had three other choices. Something else that you could listen to at the same time.
You just hit that button and hear ka-chunk and go to track two, or ka-chunk to track three. It would say on the cassette which songs were on which track.
Which track. Just like they did for albums and sides, and then it was, you know, whatever. You can't get any of the last vestiges of Columbia House. There wasn't much left.
And you said they had gone into video, so they were doing...
Well, they were doing DVDs. I remember when I was in the CD clubs that I was getting offered into the DVD club. I didn't do that. But pretty much everything's gone now. Even up to a few years ago, you get CDs, but no more 13 records for a penny or tapes for a penny.
Oh, man, now I'm back to going to half-price records and books and movies, tapes, things. Those are awesome. Half-price. Oh, there's a chain.
I bought so much. There's half.com, too. I bought so much from there.
Man, Overstock. Overstock, when I first fell onto Overstock like 10 years ago, was mostly like that. You could get ridiculously cheap CDs and the like. So, yeah, those were really good. I still buy physical media. I know I'm a dinosaur, but I just like having physical media. And actually, the way streaming rights are, the artist still gets more if you buy a disc. I know that's strange, but at the moment,
not if I do, are still because I've that way. Almost always bought used physical media, so that doesn't get the artist anything more. But I used to power through garage sales with like this boxes of CDs and this. Oh
like
my gosh,
vinyl? So many of them. There are re-releases coming out in deluxe ways, so I think a lot of Led Zeppelin records were just re-released in these crazy deluxe CD sets with replicas of the liner notes from the 70s, which I think
is really
interesting.
Some vinyl, too. It isn't just CDs. The vinyl's made a huge comeback.
I follow a couple of people. If you follow me on Twitter, you've seen me actually retweet a couple of things from Varese Araband, who re-released the Terminator 2 soundtrack on vinyl. in a deluxe kind of carrying case kind of thing. So there is a kind of market for that, to remaster, not just on vinyl, but on CD as
people
well.
People are buying these to collect. They aren't even listening to them anyway.
Oh, I hate it when they consider this is the new Beanie Baby. It's not. Just enjoy the music. That's what it's there for. Unless it's strange collections of songs that's like a bastardized playlist. I'll give you an example. There was a new Beastie Boys collection I saw on Google Play, and I was like, I already have all these, but why did you choose these as the hits? I don't understand. And they're not even in like chronological order. They're just spaced all over the place. And I just, anyway.
The 10 songs we get the cheapest licensing for.
So true. These were used in movies and television. Therefore, we were able to get them very cheaply and put them in a collection for you. Now, copy this and go put it in your Spotify playlist.
Yeah. Greatest hits that we could license.
Yes. You know, speaking of Uber, actually, Spotify, they must have gotten Spotify integration as well, like Lyft had it. So it was like, you know, if you have Spotify, when you get into their car, you can share the playlist and listen to your music in your driver's car. And, was using Uber the other day, and it asked.
I thought it was just on Uber. I didn't think Lyft had it.
No, Lyft kind of did it first. Lyft was one of the first ones to kind of do the sharing of the music playlist thing. The same way that Lyft was doing Starbucks cards, so you can actually do like a Starbucks affiliate program, so you and your driver can earn points for valuable coffee.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah, I did see that. Yeah, I see the Uber Spotify thing. I'm not so sure. Maybe it was one. I mean, maybe, at least I know the only times I've seen it were on Uber, but I do all that stuff. I love doing the jukeboxes, the bars. Those are fun. Yep. Cost me way too much money. AMI Barlink and Touch Tunes.
Did you do any of the ice cream or kittens or any of the weird promotions?
Well, ice cream wasn't available here.
Right.
Or I would have, because they actually had a deal with certain credit cards that you could get free ice cream, but sadly not in this city. There is an Uber deal. If you get a Capital One Quicksilver credit card,
right,
you get 20% off all Uber rides through April of 2016. So an additional 20%. Yes. Wow.
There was an article I saw, and I think I retweeted, that was Uber's losing millions a month, which, you know, for any startup, that's not a surprise. They were talking about this week a couple of mainstream stories that kind of happened this week, other than Android M and Stage Fright and Apple OS having a couple of exploits on it, too. There were conversations about Amazon and Amazon's culture and people having to work under really strange work conditions, almost to the point of hostility, at Amazon. And that's nothing new. I remember actually in the .com era, people who were trapped, they had to actually work 5 years before they could get their stock. And if they were there from the very beginning, they had to work a certain number of years before they could get their benefits and vested and all this other stuff. So they used to call them the indentured servants of Amazon. And this is back in 1999.
You see the Amazon quote, obviously not an official quote, but it was like, Jeff Bezos sees that your Amazon problems and guarantees you that HR is working 100 hours a week to solve your problems.
Press the Mayday button for help. Oh, man. I read a lot about their peer review system and how aggressive it was, and especially for the Fire Phone team, and how I was like, wow, that explains a lot about that project. It really, really does. And really quickly, Google has some new devices coming out. At the time of this writing, they actually have a Wi-Fi router /hub
for
$199 that is coming up. But leaks are coming out about the new Nexus devices. And we came out of the Samsung Unpacked event, in which there is the Galaxy Note Bust Out of Your Pocket 5, as well as the Galaxy S6 Edge Plus.
Well, yeah, something.
Yeah, 5.7-inch phone that's in the Galaxy line.
New Apple TV, though. That looks
new
cool.
New Apple TV next month. Yep, that's going to be running
iOS
more than
9,
likely
so
new
iOS. A lot to talk
iOS.
About coming up.
So there's all sorts of stuff for us to look forward to. I look forward to people getting the new Amazon 6 Edge Plus thing, because it's made of like glass on the back, and I've already seen videos of people dropping it, which is awesome. It's just like that guy from Australia who got like the first iPhone and then dropped it when it was made of glass. It was great. It slipped right out of his hands.
Oh, right. While he's being interviewed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was beautiful. So we have that to look forward to if you're a Samsung kind of person. And this was also an article that I saw, but I haven't put in any show notes. There was a testing what devices you needed for Android testing. It was like the 25 top Android devices for testing, and the majority of them were Samsung devices. And that puts me in a really weird dilemma, because I really don't like these new designs that Samsung is coming out with. It's, again, goodbye SD card slot, goodbye removable battery.
But hello, attachable keyboard.
Yeah. Yeah, that has been one of the things I've whined about since I left the Motorola series.
I mean, it might look goofy, but it could be an interesting thing for some people.
Do you miss it? I mean, it's been a couple of years since we've had the Motos.
Do I miss it? Not entirely. Would it be cool to type? I mean, you look at what you use your phone for, I feel like I would be definitely taking more notes if I had a keyboard attached. But I don't know. Yeah. Bluetooth is fine for those situations. I'm not sure if I want it always attached to my phone. Phone's big enough, isn't it?
Are you the type of person that would have the wallet phone case? Like you get a case for your phone, but now it's also your wallet.
No, that's losing too many things at once.
That's my thought too. I like keeping those separate. I know it, again, dinosaur again, but yeah.
I'm with you. If I lose my phone, I still have my wallet and my money. If I lose my wallet, I can still use my phone to call people.
Uh-huh.
I have extra keys in my wallet, you know, kind of.
That could scratch up that phone.
Yep, it could. Well, that's going to do it, folks. Episode number 28 in the books for BBQ. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks again to Hims for sponsoring us this week. Your needs are our solutions at hims-inc.com. And of course, thanks to our interview as well and everything else on the show, David Leposky for coming on.
And Patrick for making it all sound wonderful and beautiful.
Yes, thank you, Patrick. Really appreciate it. Thanks, Joe, for making it through the entire show.
I know. The brain has moved off. I was like, oh, I can breathe easier. The clouds have parted. Oh, hey. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, you've heard about some of the stories I was talking about that didn't make the show. I'm high traffic, but a lot of people say it's a lot of fun to read. Ranger Station, that would be twitter.com/RangerStation, all one word, and you can get some of the stories that show up on this very show and a whole lot more about science fiction and food and Doctor Who, and gonna be a lot about Doctor Who next month. Sorry.
Unfollow. Yeah. Of course, blindbargains.com and @blindbargains if you want to follow them, get the news and the stories and talk to us. I'm usually behind that account. Of course, AT Guys as well, atguys.com, where we just have lots of cool technology and gadgets, and stay tuned, more sales and deals coming up. We're clearing out a lot of refurbished and open box stuff this week.
I predict a lot of Apple TV previous generations come September.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, absolutely.
And older iPhones, because it looks like it's going to be September 18th for the new iPhone. So be prepared for that, everyone.
All right.
Hey, we got an Apple Watch one finally. I thought that was, you wondered when we were going to get our first Apple Watch classified.
Yep, that's true. Yeah, it's there now. So that's it. Feedback at blindbargains.com as well. And of course, comments on your post. Next week, we'll tell you who won the Jet memberships. So stay tuned for that. And we'll have more things to give away, I'm sure, coming up very soon.
Absolutely. As we turn the corner and head into the Christmas buying season, as well as the book updating season with iOS 9 and El Capitan and Windows updates and marshmallows. So many marshmallows. You know, roasting Android by an open fire. I just already see the tech meme headlines. I already see it. Yep, too many of those coming up. Well, thank you for listening, everybody, and we will talk to you guys very, very soon.
Bye.
This has been another Blind Bargains audio podcast. Visit blindbargains.com for the latest deals, news, and exclusive content. This podcast may not be retransmitted, sold, or reproduced without the express written permission of AT Guys.
Copyright 2015.